Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to begin by thanking Capital Link for giving me the chance to be here today and present on the outlook for the various shipping markets and the opportunities that we see for investing profitably within these markets. In terms of the structure of the talk, I'll start by looking at the correlation between different shipping sectors, how earnings are correlated across the different markets, then try and talk about some of the more structural issues that we see in the supply and demand of shipping in the current market. Then quickly outline what MSI see as the key price drivers within the shipping markets before talking a little bit about a recovery and the profitable investments that may or may not exist there. And I've got 20 minutes to do all this, so it's going to be quite quick. To begin with, I think we should all know that shipping is a correlated industry. And this first graphic just outlines this. It shows the correlation between earnings across the major shipping markets. Dark green shows a correlation of over 75% in terms of the earnings. So you can see, for example, tankers and bulkers are very well correlated. They're 75% plus correlated. The specialist sectors, slightly less so. That's a shade of orange, implies a positive correlation, but less than 50%. It's really only once you start looking at the offshore assets, the OSVs and the drilling rigs, where this correlation breaks down. Otherwise, shipping markets, however much we try and tease out the differentials between tankers and bulkers, are fundamentally quite well correlated. Where does this correlation come from? Well, demand only explains part of the story. This is the same concept with the different colours showing the different levels of correlation between each market. I've disaggregated it into the various shipping sectors, crude oil products, chems, LPG, etc., etc. And you can see that actually demand for each of the shipping asset classes isn't that well correlated. In general, with the exception of the offshore sector, there is a positive correlation, but it's generally a very weak one. It's only between container ships and car carriers that you have that nailed on plus 75% correlation in demand. Instead, in our view, the reason why shipping is correlated is the correlation within the supply side. And this is just a graphic to illustrate that. This, for each of the four major markets, I've picked an indicator of earnings and a key demand driver. So the top left-hand chart is a VLCC and the oil price. Top right-hand chart is a MR tanker and the global refinery utilization. Bottom left, small container ship and the global GDP. Bottom right is the Capesize time charter rate and Chinese iron ore imports. And throughout the late 90s and the 2000s up until the financial crisis, there was a very good correlation between demand and vessel earnings. Demand went up, so did earnings. However, since the financial crisis, that correlation has broken down. Demand's actually still been quite strong, but there's no correlation between demand and earnings. Supply is driving those two variables apart. So, We have this structural issue of oversupply. However, there's also been a lot of commentary about the demand side for shipping and some longer-term structural issues here as well. This is just a typical example. This is a headline from Tradewinds, shipping demand heading for a new era of low trade growth. I've also used quite a common chart from the WTO showing global trade as a proportion of global GDP. And the focus is on the sort of the post-financial crash of 2007, where you see that relationship plateauing. Previously, both global trade had increased, and it increased as a proportion of GDP. Now that's slowed. And this is obviously of considerable concern to the shipping industry. For some industries, like the container ship industry, there's even more commentary and even more concern. This idea that there used to be a multiplier between container trade and GDP, and that multiplier has somehow come unstuck. We're actually somewhat skeptical of this. The multiplier on this chart is shown by the yellow line. And as you can see, it's pretty volatile anyhow. There's no clear 3x or 2x GDP in the first place. And actually, if you break down container shipping into regions and compare, say, the multiplier of North American GDP and North American imports, that relationship fades even further. So this should be a clue that we don't see these relationships set in stone. And I also want to provide some of a longer-term perspective here. We shouldn't be surprised that trade growth is slow. We're recovering from a recession, and it's a well-established economic fact that recovering from recession typically implies low trade growth. Here, I've indexed the same variable, the ratio of trade to GDP, and I've plotted it for three different recessions. So the green line shows the most recent recession, 2007 through to 2015, where we are today. The yellow line shows the 1980s, and the dark blue line shows the granddaddy of them all, the Great Depression. And it's quite interesting. You can see, because modern supply chains are a lot more agile and a lot more nimble, actually 2009 represented the fastest fall in trade that we'd ever seen as a proportion of global GDP. However, the recovery was equally as fast, and actually where we are today in terms of trade growth, or trade, the relationship between trade and GDP, is better than where we'd expect to be compared to both the 80s and particularly compared to the Great Depression. So I think that's one thing to bear in mind. The other is just the wider context. This is the same chart that I opened the section with, but with some history going back to 1870. And people who are paying particular attention will see that actually we had this same slowdown in global trade as a percentage of GDP in the 80s. That was just proved to be just a cyclical event. We hope that it will be similarly cyclical today. But look, there, at what happens during and after the First World War, there's a real structural decline in trade as a function of GDP. That's to do with the breakdown of the international trading system, the gold standard, and it's also a feature of the lack of commitment from the preeminent economic powers at the time, Britain, France, and America, to free trade. And I think here there are worrying echoes today. You have a preeminent economic power, North America, that is no longer as committed to free trade. So from anyone who's exposed to the shipping industry, this chart should be somewhat scary. On that bright note, let's move on and talk about shipping supply. I want to talk about first one of the metrics that's quite commonly misunderstood or misused within shipping, which is the ratio of the order book to the fleet. I've just taken three snapshots for the bulker and tanker industries, how the order book to fleet ratio looked like in 2003, how it looks like in 2008, and how it looks like in 2016. And as you can see, in both cases, you had a huge run-up in the order book to fleet ratio from 2003 to 2008, and now it's come back down, and in both cases, for both tankers and bulkers, order book to fleet looks better now than it did in 2003. In and of itself, that should be a positive thing, but that's not the only factor that we should take into account. You also have to think of vessel demand. And by vessel demand, I don't just mean trade in tons. You have to take into account vessel routes, the distance, speed, port times, waiting times, operating days, ballast ratios, carrying capacity, and size changes. And each of these you have to take into account because they have very significant impacts on vessel demand. This chart here just restates the previous one. It now shows the order book in million deadweight, and then also the incremental vessel demand that we saw in terms of trade over the following 3 years. So, for example, in 2003, the bulker order book was only 50 million deadweight. And from 2003 to 2006, there was going to be 70 million deadweight of incremental bulker demand. So whatever happened with respect to scrapping, the bulk market was always going to be going to go on a very strong bull run. As I say, this chart doesn't take into account scrapping, but if you look at 2016, again, the dry bulk industry, you have 70 million deadweight on the order book and only 50 million deadweight of incremental demand that we project over the next 3 years. So in order to keep the dry bulk market balanced, then we're going to need to scrap at least 20 million deadweight, and that's assuming no new orders. So I think the order book fleet ratio can be a little bit misleading. This is it replotted again, and you see that we have the order book fleet ratio being lower in 2016 than it was in 2003. But once you take into account demand, actually, the ratio of the order book to the required capacity from demand is considerably higher. This ties into another worrying aspect, which is shipyard capacity. This chart shows the huge run-up in shipyard capacity that we saw prior to the financial crisis. We then have a retrenchment after the financial crisis as ordering stopped. Then you had eco ships and shale and a new round of container ship orders, which actually in 2013 started to drive up shipyard capacity. And it's only really in 2017-18 that we see that shipyard overcapacity being consolidated. And the worry is that this is a very elastic variable. And the reason, or one of the reasons it's elastic, is shown in this visual here. This is STX Dalian, which, as we all know, is a shipyard that's been closed. It's a ghost town. No one lives there. No one works there. But the yard is still there. The facilities are there. The buildings are still there. Even there, if you look to the left of the picture, you can see some half-built ships still on the runways. This isn't the same situation in the 2000s, where we had to build shipyards from scratch. We already have the shipyards, and they can just be reopened and restarted very quickly. And this, I think, is a worrying trend. It's also one we've seen before. This shows the same chart of shipyard capacity, but going back to the 70s and 80s. And you see that same elasticity and the same volatility. And as we all know, the 80s weren't a great time for shipping, one where the shipping industry struggled with repeated overcapacity. And this, I think, is a worrying trend that we have today as well. Shipyard capacity isn't just important in terms of defining the supply side of the industry. We also believe it's a key driver for asset values. So in our view, asset values are driven by the new building price, the scrap price, the earnings, and vessel life expectancy. Just to hammer home how important the new building price is, here I've plotted the new building price, the one-year time charter rate, and the five-year-old price I think this is a VLCC, and the quarter-on-quarter change. And you can see that the areas shaded in red are where the five-year-old price and the vessel earnings move in different directions. So you have that directional differential being driven, that's being driven by the new building price, i.e. asset values will follow the new building price and not just the vessel earnings. This chart just restates this and shows that for a significant portion of time, just under 20%, you have the asset value only being driven by the new building price and not by the vessel earnings. So having said all that, where does this leave us in terms of the new building price outlook? Well, we believe new building prices are driven by two factors. First is shipyard costs, the cost of constructing ships, steel, labour, energy, etc., etc. And there, I mean, there's some good news. We think yard costs are going to bottom this year, and then we're going to see from 2017, 2018 onwards, we're going to see a cost push that will support shipbuilding prices. The other factor driving new building prices is forward cover, which is our measure of shipyard utilization, how long it would take the global shipbuilding industry to deliver the current order book if no new orders were taken. You can see that even in 2015, this was quite healthy. It would take 2.5 years for the industry to deliver its entire order book. By 2017, that's collapsed to close to 1.7 years. And we see further pressure on the shipyard industry because of falling utilization, because there's not enough contracting. In our experience, and according to our economic models, once forward cover falls below 1.8 years, shipyards lose pricing power and new building prices fall sharply. We're below that in 2017, and we expect to see shipbuilding utilization fall further in 2018. and then that gives us the green line, which is yard prices. We believe shipyard prices and new building prices will continue to fall into 2018 before recovering, driven up both by improved shipbuilding utilisation and yard costs. And then lastly, I'd like to talk a little bit about the prospects for recovery and the returns to be made within the shipping markets according to the forecasts of earnings and asset values that MSI puts together. In order to do this, I've used our online tool. It's called FMV, and it allows you just by entering a few data into a few fields to generate a current and forward view of vessel earnings and vessel asset prices. We cover all the shipping sectors. We provide data on a quarterly and annual basis, and we also provide some historical context. So this is what the output looks like. Here, I've assumed we're buying an asset today. We're contracting, either you contract a new building or you buy a five-year-old asset today. And for this, over this time horizon, I'm assuming we're going to exit that asset play. We'll divest the asset in 2021. This is the sort of returns you can expect to see. So unsurprisingly, it's the offshore sector, which is the most distressed at the moment, where we see the best returns to be made. You get 16 to 18%, depending on whether you contract a new building or second-hand asset. In general, we see returns more on the lines of 8 to 10%. And again, for pretty much every market, you would do better to buy a second-hand asset today than buy a new building. And that has a lot to do with the declining new building price that we see going forwards. Also, another way to look at this is in terms of the time horizon of your investment. And it's the markets that are really bombed out, the worst markets at the moment, the offshore market and the bulk market, where there's the best money to be made by just flipping an asset. Buy it in 2017, sell it in 2019. It's markets like LNG, which are longer-term markets, where actually holding the asset for longer, buying it today and holding it up until 2025, will increase your rate of return. So I'm more or less at the end. I'd just like to close by thank you for listening. And as a final message, the picture I'm closing with is the Ideal X, which is the first container ship. To make money in shipping, it's always difficult, but you don't need to reinvent an entire mode of transport in order to potentially make some money. Thank you very much.